It's Pet Chat time on 2NURFM, and I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Earl. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Thanks.
Now, we haven't got Cheryl Shaw today.
Just me.
So it's just you, and you will be wonderful, I'm sure.
I hope everybody hits me up for lots of calls, lots of questions.
Lots of calls. Now, are you seeing anything in particular with animals in the winter months?
Yeah, so we definitely see, things like arthritis flare up because it's colder, things are stiffer and sore. But the thing that I've been seeing a lot of at the moment is sore feet in a lot of dogs, and that's my dog included. And the thing that triggered me to it for her was that she was up through the middle of the night licking and slurping at her foot. And when I looked at it the next morning, she had a really red and infected foot. And this comes about particularly because we've had so much rain, but also because the grass in the mornings is really covered in dew. And so when a dog's foot stays wet for a prolonged period of time, the bacteria and the yeast that are naturally on the skin, these aren't like any fancy bugs, they're just normal bugs there, but they really like a nice warm and moist environment. So dogs, they get warm through their feet. That's how they sort of help to cool their bodies. So the foot is warm, and then you've got this extra moisture. And then, of course, if they're licking at their feet, they're keeping it wet, and they're also inoculating the bacteria from their mouth into the skin. And it becomes a really nasty, vicious circle because the more they lick at the foot, they're sort of irritating the skin, they're triggering it, and that makes it more itchy and sore, so they want to lick at their foot, and it's just this nasty sort of vicious cycle. So I had to take my dog into my clinic on the weekend, and she's very terrible and foot shy. I had to give her a little bit of sedation. And we had to trim up all the fur. She's a golden retriever, so really hairy feet. Trim up the fur on all four of her feet. And one foot, her right hind in particular, was really red, sore and inflamed. And she had actually quite a thickened, almost like a bit of a deeper infection there. And so we've cleaned it topically. We've put some anti-inflammatories on it. She did get herself a short course of oral antibiotics because in this instance, it was deep enough there that was worthwhile. And she's been wearing a cone for the last five to 7 days. So the cone of shame is something that, it's really helpful. So I know people sort of say, oh, well, dogs' mouths are clean, the cats' mouths are dirty. That is a very relative statement. Dogs' mouths still have plenty of bacteria and germs in there. And if you're licking a sore wound on a foot, you're going to make it worse or anywhere. So we need to prevent the licking, and we need to sort of break that cycle. So, yeah. So she's on the road to recovery now. Foot's looking much better, much more comfortable. And the cone came off this morning, and she's not licking anymore.
Yay. I bet she's very happy about that.
She is. But she's going to require some close observation. And I'm still having to dry her feet when she comes in from the outside. I've got a towel at the door drying her feet so that they're not staying as wet.
Oh, good. Good. Hopefully it stays that way.
Yeah, sure.
Now we've got Janine from Abermain on the line. Janine, you've got a dog with, let me say it right, masticatory
myositis. Masticatory myositis. So that's an inflammatory condition of the muscles of the face and head that helps a dog to chew. So she's losing control of her tongue, hard to eat and drink. How long has she got? Okay.
Yes.
How long has she been going for? Is she on some treatment for it?
Yes, she's been off and on treatment on, I think it's prednisone.
Yeah.
We're helping her with, but that's beyond helping her now.
Okay.
She's not losing weight. She's still reasonably responsive, and she loves eating.
Yeah.
And she's still our dog.
Yeah, sure.
But she's losing cognition. She wanders around like she's lost very often.
Is she a very old dog, or is she?
She's 10.
Yeah, oh, it's not that old. This is usually, it's been years since I've seen a case personally. It is usually a treatable disease, but we're talking, it's a disease that requires ongoing therapy for months usually. I think the last dog that I had, we probably had to actively manage that dog for maybe 8 to 10 months before we could get it off of its prednisolone. And sometimes we do need to use other medications that are stronger than just a steroid. So if she's having issues, I guess I would maybe go back to your vet because it's usually a matter of tapering them. So we often start them on pretty high doses and we get the inflammation under control and they regain the function. And then we have to slowly taper them off the anti-inflammatories. And if we taper too fast, they can recur. Provided she hasn't got other sort of issue sort of at play there. And it can be triggered sometimes by, you know, things like cancers and stuff like that. But we often won't see that without some pretty advanced imaging, MRI scans and those sorts of things.
She also has a lump under her right arm.
Mm, yeah, okay. So it's possible that that's, you know, playing a role. Yeah. How long has she got, as in to survive? Is that what your question is? Or
Yeah.
I mean, eating and drinking is pretty, you know, is pretty critical. Drinking is the big one, obviously. You know, we only get, 48, 72 hours if we're not drinking water, if we're getting seriously dehydrated. That's a pretty short, quick course. Eating, you know, lots of dogs will go days without eating sometimes, and that's not a major drama. They're gorge feeders in the wild, so they can go for a number of days. There are things that we sometimes can do. We find sometimes you can make, meatball type foods are easier than really mushy foods or dry kibble because they often can't chew. So we sometimes find like a semi-hard meatball or a dog roll food that's sort of got some structure but is still soft enough, you know, those sorts of things.
I'm doing that.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah. It's a really hard question to answer. I guess from a quality of life standpoint, the issue is she able to do the things that dogs, you know, need to do to have a good quality of life? Can she eat? Can she drink? Can she go to the toilet? Is she interested in interacting with the family? If she's struggling to do any of those things in a really serious way, then it may be the time to start thinking about euthanasia for her, humane euthanasia. And remembering that that's really hard and sad a decision for us to make, but it's not hard for the dog. And dogs don't look into the future. They live in the moment. So your dog won't sort of say, please don't put me down. I really wanted to get to my wife's, 50th birthday, things like that. You know, they don't have those thoughts. They really just live in the moment, and they really want to know that all the things that I need to be able to do to have a happy and fulfilled life, if that's happening today, I'm happy. And if it's not, then it's the sort of thing that we should start thinking about if it's an ongoing problem.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's very good, because she still is happy living the life with the family and all sorts of things.
Good.
But she's just losing it and wandering around the house and sleeping wherever she falls. She lies down but she's still running out and barking at things. And
yeah, so she's interacting with her environment. That's good.
Yeah, and she drinks water by grabbing at it.
Yeah,
she grabs at it.
You know what? My dog does that on a regular basis, and she's, for all intents and purposes, a perfectly normal dog with no masticatory myositis. So she sort of tries to chew her water. So.
A little more understanding on how long and if they're still having a...
Yeah, and don't give up on it. It is a frustrating condition, and relapses are common, but that's kind of par for the course. So, just keep a really open dialogue with your veterinarian if you think she's relapsing or it's not working, her current treatment. There are things we can do. I tend to find the hardest part can be the side effects of the prednisolone, unrelated to the fact that it fixes the face and the head, but then you get some pretty severe side effects, and that can be pretty hard to manage sometimes too. So,
All right.
Good luck with it, Janine.
Thank you very much for all your advice. Thank
You're welcome.
Bye. This is Pet Chat. Ray wants to know how to feed rehoused battery chickens.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, good, Dr. Kimberly. Thanks for taking my call today.
You're very welcome. So you've got yourself some sort of ex-battery hens. These are girls who are done laying in a commercial setting.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
The rescue ones.
Yeah, great. And how old are they? Have you just recently gotten them?
We've had them for about 6 months now.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure how old they are but they were fully grown when we had them, and they were they're still laying eggs, which is good, and like that. But I'm buying regular scratch mix for them. They're not they don't like the pellets.
Yes.
Like that, but they do like the scratch mix.
Yes.
Like that.
Okay.
I'm thinking, what else would I feed them and like that?
So they don't like the pellets, Ray. I hate to say it. They need to heat the pellets, I'm afraid. If you don't give them the scratch mix, they will eat the pellets, as they've been eating it for the whole rest of their life. The trouble with battery hens, these are Isobrown hens, and we as human beings have bred them to be really high-producing birds, right? So they lay an egg every single day pretty well. As they get older, that will probably taper off. The reality of the exercise, though, is that if they're eating a scratch mix, so when we say scratch mix, we're usually talking about a grain mix, right? So they're actually eating whole grains. When they're eating that, they are not getting enough protein and calcium and nutrients to keep them healthy if they are still laying, okay? Different story once they've stopped laying pretty well completely. But while they're still laying, if we're not feeding them a good quality layer pellet, they will become 100% with a guarantee. It's just a matter of time. They'll become hypocalcemic, so their calcium levels drop. They will become low protein. Their body weights will drop in their condition, and they'll start to lose muscle, which means they lose tone for being able to move those eggs down through, and the other micronutrients sort of start to get out of balance, because unfortunately scratch mixes are the potato chip of the bird world. Okay, scratch mixes and seeds and grains, they have plenty of calories, lots of fat, they have very, very poor calcium to phosphorus ratios, they don't have very good protein levels, and they are not really suitable for feeding to chickens that are still actively laying, particularly not Isobrowns. Maybe if you have a little boutique breed or a little bantam, they might, get along okay. But an Isobrown chicken really needs to be on a scratch mix. And the reason they don't like, a layer pellet. The reason they don't like the layer pellet is because it's like the equivalent of telling a child they need to eat their broccoli and Brussels sprouts. Really good for them, high in fiber. It's got all the right stuff. And the grains, the scratch mix is like the potato chips. So it's what they want to eat rather than what they need to eat. So I would just stop giving them the choice. These ex-battery hens, from the time that they have been in a commercial setting, have only ever had a layer pellet, and they will eat it if they're not given the choice. But chickens, birds in general, are pretty intelligent animals. They know what tastes better, they know what they like, and their bodies are naturally attracted to fat. And so because the grains, the scratch mix is high in lipids and oils, they will be attracted to that, even though that's not really what they actually need, okay? In addition to that, you can give them some table scraps and those sorts of things, vegetable-based, greens and things like that. They certainly will like to go around and outside and have a pick through the grass and eat a few bugs, things like that. We do want to steer clear of anything that's meaty. We don't do swill feeding. We don't recommend swill feeding or any kind of meaty sort of base feeding to production animals. And we want to stay away from things that are really high in carbohydrates. So they will also like bread, and they will also, like crackers and, pizza crusts and things like that. But we do want to try to avoid that because, again, they're not getting the right nutrition. And it actually, it doesn't seem like it would, but it a little bit of bread here and there actually really can throw off the balance of the protein and the calcium that they need. And layer hens, Isobrown chickens in particular, they're lovely birds, and we really appreciate, you taking them on after their commercial life. But they already have such a high rate of reproductive disease, things then in them. That will come out in most birds at this, at some stage, but we can prevent it or slow it down by making sure that we're giving them the nutrients that they need to give their ovaries and their oviducts the optimal, chance of producing the eggs that they're making.
Right, because what I'm feeding them at the moment, yep, is half scratch mix, half table scrap, half vegetable scraps, and a little bit of things like lettuce and a few other things that are available to them. What about berries?
Berries. I don't think there's no problem with berries. Again, in small quantities. Yeah.
That's all right. That's all right, because we like mixing them, give them a bit of variety. So we're trying to get them back onto the laying pellets. Because when we first got them, they virtually turned their nose up from the laying pellets. They refused for about a week or so, refused the laying pellets, and then we mixed the laying pellets with the scratch mix.
Yeah. And they were probably stressed. You first get them, they've come from a commercial setting, all of a sudden you put them in a spot where they've got more space than they've ever seen before. They've got, you know, a whole new view and outlook on life. They're a little bit stressed, they're probably pretty exhausted. And, you know, in the short term, a little bit of scratch mix goes a long way to just making them sort of feel a bit better. But I would, now they're hopefully more used to your environment, and the world is not such a scary and unfamiliar place. So I would just, you know, get a little bit tough with them and sort of go, suck it up, ladies. This is what you've got.
Eat what you're given.
Yeah. And then, you know, some berries and some table scraps on top of that. They'll get back with the program.
All right. Good luck with that, Ray. This is Pet Chat. And we've got Joanne on the line from Singleton. Joanne, you've got a question about eggs?
Yes, I have a grey quarian.
Mm-hmm.
She's absolutely beautiful, but she keeps laying an odd egg every now and then.
Odd egg, okay. As in, every once in a while she's laying a normal-looking egg, or she's laying an odd-shaped egg?
No, it's a normal egg, Great. But she lays three
yep.
at a time.
Yep.
You know, one after the other.
Mm-hmm.
But she eats a lot of bread. And is that a good thing for her or not?
So bread in itself is not bad, but it's probably, when you say a lot of bread is not very nutritious for her, right? So she likes it. My birds love, you know, I have a piece of toast in the morning and everybody gets a little tiny corner when I do have a bit of toast. But we don't really want her eating a lot of it because it's not going to be high enough, again, in calcium and in protein. Quarians are one of the species of birds that we do see hypersexualization and, you know, pathological egg laying is really, really common. And so we do want to make sure that your little bird is getting a calcium supplement in the water anytime she's laying. In our clinical situation, we would often counsel against, you know, trying to prevent that egg laying so she doesn't get into trouble with egg binding and that sort of thing. But as a minimum, she should be getting calcium supplementation in the water anytime she's, you know, sort of actively laying or full time. Presumably, she eats predominantly a seed-based diet, is that right?
Yep.
So again, similar to what we were just talking about with Ray, seeds and grains are kind of the potato chips of the bird world. And unfortunately in Australia, we're very good at feeding seeds and not very good at feeding sort of a healthier sort of formulated diet for birds. And it can be tricky to convert a pet, you know, sort of cockatiel quarian onto those sorts of diets. We would still recommend trying, but it's not like a dog or a chicken where you can just take the old food away and put the new food in front. These guys actually will starve themselves if you take away the food that they're not used to.
If you're eating something, she'll come and try and eat it out of your
Great.
Mouth.
So that's really, really good, because those birds are much more likely to, you know, to cooperate with a pellet conversion. And if you go online and look for converting my bird to a pelleted diet, there's lots and lots of good sort of protocols for how to do that. What I would suggest, we want her eating a lot of dark green leafy vegetables, because that's going to have a lot of calcium. So kale, spinach, you know, even rocket, those sorts of things have lots of calcium in them. Also have lots of fiber. She'll need something that's got a bit more protein. Seed, unfortunately, doesn't have a lot of protein in it. So presumably she's just on her own. She's not actually hatching. These aren't fertile eggs. She's just laying. Is that right?
Yeah. She's on her own. She's a spoiled thing.
I mean, protein in this sort of setting, you can add a little, actually, bit of cooked egg. You know, if she'll eat that off of your plate, that can help to lift the protein content. But in the long term, what we would ideally do would be to wean her off of her seed-based diet and onto a good quality formulated diet. And that will, you know, automatically bump the protein levels up. But the calcium is the thing that we really struggle to keep up. These guys will preferentially take calcium out of their bone and they'll put it into their eggshells. So by the time you see them starting to lay abnormal or soft-shelled eggs, their bones are already super, super, super depleted and weakened, and that then actually causes muscle weakness as well. So then we get into an egg-binding situation. So a little bit of bread is not a problem. The way I always talk to people about feeding birds is small amounts of a wide variety of things is not ever going to be a problem. But any one thing being eaten as the most, you know, the common thing, if it's not a good quality pellet, then we're going to end up with, you know, with problems and a lack of balance in our diet.
Oh, okay. Not
okay.
A problem.
All right.
Thank you very much for that.
Good luck, Joanne. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Good luck. Okay. Now, we're got a little bit of time left, and we're just waiting for another caller there. And we've got our dog and cat of the week to talk about.
Yeah.
So we've got Dexter, the cat.
This is a lovely little cat. It says Dexter is 8, so he's sort of a middle-aged cat, not too old, not too young. Really super easygoing and affectionate cat. He's a medium-haired sort of black and white cat with a really expressionate face. I really like his face and his yellow eyes. It says that he is really cuddly with his humans and super calm and chilled, and he's quite happy to be around kids, with other cats, and even with dogs. So if you think that you would be looking for, you know, another companion, a feline companion, Dexter looks like he would be a really good option for you.
Dexter,
a bit of grooming required though in a medium-haired cat. So
yeah, nice and fluffy.
Yeah.
All right, and our dog is George.
So this guy is a senior member of the clan. He is George. He's a 10-year-old Kelpie dog. So it says that he's also really friendly. Has a calm, affectionate, and trusting temperament. Loves the company of other dogs and people. Oh, it says calm older dogs. It doesn't do. He's not a fan of cats, or he's maybe not trustworthy with cats. But it says he's still pretty, you know, he wants to get out, still go for a walk. He's probably not going to be doing significant running with you because of his age. He's well toilet trained, travels in the car really well. They talk about his little tippy tapping of his feet when he's greeting you. So that sounds pretty cute. He does have a few health requirements. So he is blind in one eye. And for some reason, they haven't explained, it says he needs to eat a soft food. So maybe he's had some trouble with his mouth or had some teeth out. So he's got a bit of a vision impairment there, but he's still pretty active and happy. So he's, 10-year-old dog. He's still likely got a good 2 to maybe 5 years in him. And so definitely worthwhile checking him out if you are interested in an older dog who's maybe not going to be a 12-year commitment, but, could really use a happy and loving and stable home for the next few years.
It looks like a beautiful little dog.
Yeah, nice fella.
Yeah.
They've got him in a pink jacket. I'm not sure about the... he's a George. He's in a pink heart jacket. But anyway, go cute. Online and have a look at his photos. He's cute.
Yeah, go to 2NURFM.com.au and you'll be able to have a look. Now, we have to pick our caller of the week.
Yeah, and, caller of the week.
Yes, so we've got Janine, Ray or Joanne. Who are we going to go for?
Oh, goodness, I don't know.
Let's just... throw a coin.
Toss a coin, yeah. Let's go with one of our bird. We have a chicken and we have a quarry, and we don't get very many bird calls, so
pick
between them.
Let's give it to Ray. Ray from Mayfield, congratulations. You've won the Dozer and Co. voucher.
Lovely.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Kimberly Earle.
Thank you.
It's been great for Pet Chat. You're going away on holidays.
I'm going back to Canada for about 6 weeks, so I will be away for a while. But
we'll miss you.
Chat when we come back.
Well, we'll have Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Fiona and Dr. David coming in. So, yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank
we'll see you next time
you
on
again.
Pet Chat.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, finance, business, and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.